Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media, we talk a lot about fan culture and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. Amen. No rain from the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A game, better bring your A game. Competition starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. Eight,
mate, no rain. Hey now, it's the Mike and JD Show, and I am your host, Mike Gilbert, and I'm joined as always by JD, by God Oliva. How you doing, JD?
Oh, man, we had the high school sectional wrestling tournament this past weekend, and it was the worst performance that we have had in the 10 years we've been at the high school. So, been better.
Yeah, that sucks, man. I would tell you what I did this weekend, but I don't want to piss anybody off. But
well, wait on me. What'd you do this weekend?
I went to the beach at the Ritz-Carlton on Oahu, and there was actually some Raiders players there. It was kind of funny. The only one that I recognized was a wide receiver named Jacoby Myers, because he literally has his name tattooed on his back like it's his jersey. So I looked at his back. I was like, because you can kind of tell, like, if somebody's a professional football player sometimes. So, especially with, like, you know, the people that got around him and things like that. It's like, okay, this guy's probably some type of famous dude, maybe like an athlete, especially with how jacked he was. Mm-hmm. And I saw the name on the back because he was sitting right in front of me. And I Googled him. I was like, oh, sure enough, that was Jacoby Myers. I was like, okay, I thought that was him. So that was pretty cool. And today – we did the most Caucasian thing ever. After church, we drove an hour to go to a coffee farm to get coffee. And the coffee, they make it there on the farm. And I got like one of the girly drink. It was a pumpkin pie macchiato. And it was actually pretty good, but that's what I did today. So now that I'm out of school, I have kind of more of a stress-free life.
I envy that. I look forward to getting to that stress-free life come summertime. Can I make a confession on this show?
Yeah, go ahead.
I have never had a cup of coffee in my life.
Really?
I've tried it. I've sampled it. I think it's disgusting. I smell it and I get nauseated. I hate coffee.
So, you know what's so funny? I was the same way until I was like 30 years old. Cause I was more of a Red Bull guy and a Monster Energy guy. But the funny part is that the reason why I got onto coffee is because I had to go to rehab. So I went in there and you couldn't bring anything with you. And they had like a inside the hospital, they had like a cafeteria, and the only caffeine you could get was coffee. And I was so hooked on caffeine at this point. I was like, I'll just take anything. And next day, and so I drank coffee for 28 straight days there because it was free. And I've been hooked on that ever since. I just kind of traded one deal for the other, but I drink coffee literally every day now.
If you're that's a better trade, quite frankly. I cannot do it. Like, I'll go into Starbucks and I can work. I just started drinking hot tea like a year, like when I started teaching, my wife started getting me into like hot tea and stuff like that. And I can't do coffee. Like, I tried like the iced coffees and stuff like that. It's disgusting. I tried the nitro cold brews because one of my best friends loves this. Oh, I bet you like this. So I bought one. I took a sip. I'm like, okay, I can do this. I took another sip. I'm like, I can do this. And I took the third, and then I just threw it out the window. I'm like, I can't have this. It's fucking awful. Like,
I have a special coffee maker that makes iced coffee. So that's where I'm at. And then I have an espresso machine too. I have all of that in my house. Yet I still drove an hour to a coffee farm to have their coffee. That's how much we love coffee in this family.
I did have espresso like 2 years ago at Fargo after our tournament. And our leader was like, hey, everyone have espresso. So I tried espresso for the first time. I didn't love it, but boy, was I fucking wired right after I had that espresso. That shit works, man.
Yeah. It's like getting a bump of the white stuff like in Vegas. I've never done that.
So I'll take your word for that on that.
I retire this summer. We'll have a conversation later after the summer. after the summer, because I can't
put a pin in that one.
Yeah, but let's put a pin in that conversation about my wild summer of 2013 and 2014. So, or my wild year between those 2 years.
Address that at a later time when Mike is retired. Good talk. I have lived such a boring life that I never had a party. I don't know if it's growing up with my dad. You know, the difference between you and me is you were an alcoholic and I grew up with an alcoholic. So like my way of rebelling was to do absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
And to just be as nerdy as humanly possible to piss him off. So like I never had that type of a phase at all. And I just turned 45 this week. So it's like, I have no urge to start now. You know,
you're way too old to start something like that now.
That's too much work, too much effort.
yeah, that's so funny. But hey, thanks everybody for joining us. I promise I'm not going to go 20 minutes in a non-wrestling talk. We got a comment on our show last week. Somebody actually timestamped when wrestling talk starts. That way everybody else can just skip ahead of us.
Hey, man, this is the Voices of Wrestling Network show. This is what we do here.
Yeah. Well, so my opinion on it is, and I think other people have the same opinion. We typically don't do banter for that long, but I feel like it's important for the audience to get to know us a little bit before we just start putting out our bullshit opinions on pro wrestling. So we like to kind of start it off by just chopping it up. And we've just been doing that naturally for going on fucking 4 years now. That's just how we've always been.
Like, you're one of my best friends, and this is my chance to talk to you every week is on the show. Like, we'll text throughout the week, but our only chance to actually, like, interact and talk is when we're doing the show. So sometimes it's like, hey, how's my friend doing?
Right.
So, yeah. Sorry, everybody. I know, most people dig that. The band. It's like when you listen to Joe and Rich, and I admit sometimes 40 minutes listening to them talk about the Reds can be a bit much. So I sympathize. But tough.
Yeah. Oh, hold on. This is a fucking good comment.
Oh, great.
Hold on. Look, they're stopwatching people for everything these days.
You know, I don't like the stopwatch jokes because that's our friend. Like,
Sam, I know.
Our friend Sam, she's the one who was the stopwatch girl and took a lot of shit for it.
Yeah.
And like, she's awesome. She's been on the show. We've been on their show. We both said you should sell stopwatch t-shirts.
Yes. I still believe that. I even made them a design, but they have yet to do it.
So I know. Like, it's just they aren't as big pricks as you and I are, apparently. So, whoops.
Sorry. No. Speaking of which, did you see that AEW finally is selling Sicko's t-shirts?
Oh, it's about time.
Yeah, but the one that I'm selling, which I have sold exactly one, the one that I'm selling is actually way better.
Well, I mean, I'll be honest with you, Mike. I teach graphic design, so I can talk about this. Most people design the shirts for AEW are just awful. Like, remember they were a t-shirt company. They used to have pretty good t-shirt designs. We are past that. We are past the point of AEW having good, well-designed t-shirts. They no longer do.
Yeah. So they came out with a Ricochet shirt where he's just kind of bleeding and it says, aha, across it. And it is among the worst t-shirts I've ever seen in my life. Second to, I believe it was Pete Dunne says, "I'm nobody's bitch." They're selling that as a t-shirt in the WWE. So both companies have really bad t-shirts out right now.
I mean, they're bad t-shirts. They're bad design t-shirts. They're not, it's not like come drop AJ Styles bad t-shirts.
That one is the all-time worst. All like time. Nothing's ever.
No, yeah. And nothing ever will. The fact that crossed multiple levels of people going, yes, that's just what we need. Spooge AJ Styles logo. I'm amazed AJ didn't say anything about it, to be quite frank, because that's all it looks like. But
not only did he not say anything about it, he took a picture for like their catalog and was wearing the t-shirt, and it showed the front and back, and he's just got like he's got a pearl necklace, you know, and it's like it's on both sides.
Oh, dude. You know, I met AJ once. He's a real nice guy.
You know what? He seems like a good dude. Yeah.
We had a real good conversation about amateur wrestling. The one night I worked for WWE, I was doing freelance work for them. And I was wearing my Stanford, my buddy was coaching at Stanford at the time. And I was wearing my Stanford wrestling t-shirt. And he just felt the need to talk about amateur wrestling with me for like 20 minutes. It was freaking awesome. And he seemed like such a nice guy. So I can't help but wonder how the hell he never said anything about booged up t-shirt that he was supposed to. Is it possible he just didn't read?
So the thing about AJ Styles, at least from what I gather of him, is he's a company guy. So he was on Twitter earlier because people are dogging the fact that Road Dogg is now the co-head writer of SmackDown, right? Which means not much because Triple H, and everything is Triple H, right? But it came out that Road Dogg is the co-head writer. And so people are dogging. He actually quote tweeted like some nobody dogging it. And he was like, "Hey, look, you know, say what you want about what he was doing before, but he had somebody above him kind of throwing away all of his ideas. So who knows what really, you know," he actually made probably a decent point. But he was out there defending Road Dogg when he really doesn't have to. I think he might just be a.
Is Mike Fraser? Is that me? I'm not sure.
You know, you're kind of going in and out a little bit.
Yeah, one of us was going in and out, and I'm not sure which one it was. Anyways, yeah, I think AJ might just be a company guy, right? Might just try to be a good old boy and just toe the company line. I don't know. Regardless, worst t-shirt ever.
Yeah. Regardless, he still wore a spooge shirt. Hold on, we're getting people talking about some of the worst t-shirts. We can roll with this.
Let's do this.
Okay, transferring heat. The Britt Baker black eye shirt, that was a bad one.
I forgot about that one.
So it was a black eye. So she got a black eye in a match, and they put it on a t-shirt. And so you had like men walking around with a woman with a black eye on.
Oh yeah. Chest. So people,
like, I don't think anybody put two and two together. And so it was just like, I think after a while they, you know, they probably should have realized it sooner that was a bad idea. I don't think anybody had any ill intent there. But the fact of the matter is they went out and then defended it. Like, they defended the idea behind it. And it was like, no, that's just something probably you don't need to touch there.
That was a pro domestic violence t-shirt is what that looked like. Pretty girl with a big black eye.
Unintentional though. Like, I don't think there was any intent in that, but
no, I agree. I agree. It was also a poorly designed t-shirt. It
wasn't working.
It was also had a bad design. So yeah, not also a good t-shirt. What else we got? What other shitty t-shirts people bringing up?
Let's see. Okay, actually, that was the only one. That was the only shitty t-shirt.
You got my hopes up.
So AJ Styles is big in the gay community.
The gay community?
Well, so he was kind of like popular like on online forums or whatever. And when someone asked him about it, you could tell that he was like a old school redneck Republican and was like not interested. So,
I mean,
he didn't say anything mean, but he was like not interested, bro.
Can we expect anything else from a guy who grew up in Gainesville, Georgia? Like, I mean, I hate to be like that guy, but I think I'm going to be that guy right now. I mean,
right. It's like getting mad at the guy who sells duck whistles, like for not being aligned with your political views. It's like,
yeah. <It's> like, yeah, I mean,
yeah,
I can't get mad at my dog when he shits on the floor. He's a dog.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. But all right, hold on. We got Sin Cara Dick shirt. I don't think I remember that one.
Remember that one, Sin Cara Dick shirt. That one doesn't.
I don't want to Google that right now because it'll do something to my algorithm. So
yeah, you don't want to. That's the last thing you want to research.
All right. So before we get started on our AEW talk, because both of us did watch Grand Slam last night, there's controversy in AEW, believe it or not. But I don't think it's real controversy. Shocking. But we'll talk about it.
What this week?
But listen, I do want to give a quick shout out to one Grand Hamada. If you listen to the flagship coming up this week, they will do probably 2 hours on Grand Hamada. But if you're here to listen to like two guys talk about Grand Hamada, I got to be honest, I don't know much about Grand Hamada. I did read Case Lowe's article that he wrote for the Voices of Wrestling. So I just want to push everybody to Case Lowe's article. Go and check that out. He does a Dragon Gate podcast, and I get the feeling that he will do
open the Voice Gate.
Open the Voice Gate, absolutely. He will do a full-on eulogy for him, and I know that Joe and Rich will get to do that. He died just yesterday. I didn't get a ton of time to go to do research other than reading Case Lowe's awesome article. But just rest in peace, Grand Hamada. He was a obviously Japanese-born wrestler. I think he was trained by Tatsumi Fujinami, or he was in that New Japan Dojo camp. And then he actually ended up becoming a big star in Mexico, and that's really where he found his stardom there, I think, in a UWA in Mexico, if I remember correctly. So he's the guy that kind of brought Lucha Libre over to Japan and kind of merged the two styles. And then, so when you see a company like Dragon Gate, you would say that Grand Hamada was one of the founding fathers of Dragon Gate, even if not directly. So shout out Grand Hamada, rest in peace.
We tried to get John Hughes on the show to talk about it, but he was busy. Because, I don't know, it's just a week. That's just everyone's got cultural blind spots. This is one that Mike and I have. So, you know, rest in peace, Grand Hamada.
Yeah, yeah. Rest in peace. King of the North, he is here. So just wanted to say our pre-y'all's show and both of you as people. Happy belated birthday, JD. Please enjoy this 10 cents American. Do we need to do the conversion on the Canadian dollar now that they're the 51st state?
For 51st state of Canada, I love that they grabbed them at one of the most liberal countries in the world, and they're going to make them into one state so we can
strategy, I think. Like, yeah,
no, it's actually a good strategy because then you imagine it. Okay, like if you got all the provinces as states, then you totally tip the balance in the Senate. Trump's not going to do that. So you make Canada one state. So you get two senators and two and like, well, probably like 47 representatives. But I mean, yeah. I look forward to adding the king.
Yeah.
You know,
to I just want to say also shout out to my Canadian friends. Apparently we kicked their asses in hockey this week.
We did.
We did. Yeah. It was USA versus Canada. They did a whole thing. And I was sure enough was talking shit online, but I can't name five hockey players. I certainly couldn't name you a single American hockey player, but I just know that we kicked their asses. So,
all right.
Yeah. So USA, there we go.
Yeah. Yeah,
right, he goes, hold on, go to hell. Actually, I take it back. Sorry. Money's ours, buddy. Money is ours.
Sorry.
Already. Yeah. Money is ours.
King of the North got quoted on Between the Sheets this week, Bix and with Bix and Chris. I was like, hey, I know that guy.
What did they say?
I think it was one of the I think he weighed in on one of the controversies with one of the I think it was one of the fake ass reporters that WWE brings in, one of the female ones. She was being, I don't know, it sounded like she was being kind of bitchy and like, you know, people buried her on the whole thing. So I don't know the whole story, but I heard the king's name get shouted out. So I was like, hey.
Okay. Okay. Well, good. Well, if you're getting a shout out by Bixenspan and Chris Zellner, I think that's a big deal. So
kind of cool.
Yeah. All right. All right. So let's go ahead and get into the AEW controversy. AEW's Australia. So let's get the controversy out of the way because I don't really think it's really a controversy. So AEW was planning the Grand Slam for Australia, right, in Brisbane. It was initially going to be a stadium show, but they couldn't sell enough tickets. They caught it early. They moved it into an arena. And I guess the controversy there among people in Australia, and of course the grifters have started to take hold of that story, is that they didn't offer refunds, which I don't know if that's true or not. So if that is true, somebody please tell me. Because I think if you're changing venues, you should offer a refund. But if they didn't, which I have not heard that officially. So, but they moved it into a smaller venue, but they didn't change the ticket prices, and because of that, they were able to do their third largest gate in the company history. I don't see the controversy there. Just a couple of years ago, WWE had Money at the Bank at Allegiant Stadium, and they couldn't sell enough tickets, so they moved it to the MGM Grand. That's like a normal thing. Like, hey, look, they took a big swing initially. They caught it early. They moved the show to a smaller venue, and they had a really good show. I don't understand what people are complaining about.
Because it's cool to complain. I forgot about the Money in the Bank thing. I was going to quote WrestleMania 7 when they couldn't sell tickets and had to blame it on the Iraq War that had.
Oh yeah, no, it's because Sergeant Slaughter was too good of a heel. Yeah.
No. Oh, yeah. So if WWE does, if WWE does it, it's fine. If AEW does it, it's bad. And you get turd fucks like Dave LaGreca, who's now a sellout piece of garbage, on his show saying it. And like, there's so many, AEW has so much against it right now as far as the media goes. There's so many people in the bag, so many people willing to just suck at the teat of Triple H.
Yeah.
And man, that show right now, I'm proud to listen to my son say, I tried to watch WWE with my friend dad. It was boring. I'm just the best dad in the world. So, I mean, I who cares? Like, this is what wrestling does. We mean, like, are we going to get, this is wrestling. Like, this is what happens.
It's not even just wrestling. Like, this happens in like boxing and MMA too, or this happens in music. Like music, you book a venue that's too big. It's like, okay, you know, I'm not as hot as I thought it was. Let's move it to a smaller venue so we can recoup some of the money, and hope everybody just goes to that newer venue and we sell it out. Mm-hmm. Look, you want to make fun of them because they couldn't sell a stadium. Okay, I guess fine, go ahead. But I don't think anybody can get mad at them for moving to a smaller venue because it ended up being much better this way. I don't know if it was profitable or not. It cost a lot of money to get everybody over there, but they did a big gate.
Third highest gate in company history. Yeah, the ticket prices are expensive, but you know, people paid. There was 13,000 people there. They're not going to get a lot of 13,000 people crowds, especially for essentially an overblown TV taping. It was a hot crowd. Yeah. It was a good show. Why are we mad?
Yeah. I also do want to say to the AEW fans cheering that they got this $1.3 million gate for 11,000 people. You guys are cheering and bragging online and you're proud of AEW, and I get it. But just a few months ago, WWE was celebrating that they broke their arena gate record, and you were making fun of them because they were they're bilking their audience for these high ticket prices, which is exactly what happened here. There's no such thing as a ticket price is too high. It just doesn't exist. You either want to buy it or you don't. It's worth whatever people are willing to pay for it. Mm-hmm. So if the ticket price is too high for you, then you don't have to buy it. You can wait until those ticket prices drop. And if the demand isn't there, prices will drop eventually. I'm very likely going to Slammiversary this year, right? It costs $700 to get front row. You're not going to hear me complain about a $700 ticket because I ain't buying a $700 ticket. I'm going to pay for a $40 ticket and sit up top because I don't care that much, right? I'm a very cheap person, so I'm not spending more than that on a ticket. So just keep that in mind, guys. When you are at this gate, just know that you're celebrating the fact that they raised their ticket prices and killed the gate, which they should have done because they have to price it based off of what they think the market's going to be. And if people buy them, then it was priced correctly. If people don't buy them, then it was too high.
Right. Like you can't have it both ways. You can't bury the one company for doing it and praise the other. Like I don't like WWE, but like if the market says this is what a ticket costs and people are willing to pay it, then that's what the market says. Like it's very easy. This is a very easy thing to do. Like I can't hate either company for charging too much for tickets because I'm just not going to buy them. It's that simple. It's just that simple.
Yeah.
Vote with your dollar.
I'm not complaining that the Super Bowl prices are too high because I ain't going.
I'm never going to go to the Super Bowl. Yeah. And I'm not losing sleep over it either.
No. Yeah, I'll watch it on TV. No problem.
Man, my wife and I are looking at like hitting up some concerts because we're getting to the age where like, you know, we should see some of these acts before they die.
Yeah. You know? Dude, I'm there with you. Yeah.
Like I think I've never told a story. My dad's 50th birthday, my brother and I bought him Tom Petty tickets, right? We were going to go see Tom Petty and it was super exciting. It was back in 2001. And the day of the tickets, I don't know if I ever told a story in the show, but I'm doing it again because I'm here. The day of the show wound up being my mom's funeral.
Oh man.
So we just didn't feel like going, right? We're like, we'll catch him next time he comes into town. And that never happened. Right. We just never got to it. And now Tom Petty's dead. My dad's dead. And I'm like, shit, I never made the time to do that.
Yeah.
You know? So I really want to go see.
So I had a
concert. Good.
Go see who?
Anybody I've ever wanted to see. You know, I really want to take the time. Like Oasis is touring and who knows when that's going to freaking implode. So I really want to do that. But the problem is it's so goddamn expensive to see these people.
Yeah. I wanted to go see Paul McCartney in San Francisco at the where the Giants play, and the tickets actually were reasonably priced. I think like the get in price is like $60, which I could do that and sit up top. That's fine. But I was just like, you know, I don't want to drive into the city. I don't want to pay for parking. And then like I've been kicking myself ever since, because now he's like in his 80s, and who knows if he's ever gonna, you know, even come close to me again. So, next time like a legendary act comes my way, I'm gonna figure out a way to go, because I don't like missing out on those things. Because Tom Petty was one of those guys that I want to make sure I saw before he dies, and I didn't make it. I still have never seen AC/DC, and I would love to go do that. And I just have never went and gone and seen them, and I would be. And Guns N' Roses, I never saw them. Thankfully, I did get to see Metallica. I went to see U2 in Vegas at Sam Boyd Stadium. I was really happy I did that. It was fun. U2's an acquired taste, right? Like I happen to have the taste for U2. I actually really like them.
I think people unfairly bag on U2 sometimes, and I don't like all of their catalog, but I like enough of it where I think I would have a good time in concert. I saw Metallica over the summer, and like they're older now, but they still put on a great show. And I'm glad that I went as an older guy where I could sit in the stands and not have to fight people the entire time. And
dude, so there's a metalcore band called Under Oath that I really like.
I'm familiar with them. Yes.
Okay. So they were here in Hawaii, and I was like, man, I really want to go see them. But when I saw the venue that they were playing, it was this really small, intimate venue with no seats. I'm actually getting rated right now by the VA because I have arthritis in my knee. So I'm probably going to get a decent payout from the VA for all of the arthritis I have in both knees. I went and saw Jimmy Eat World there a couple years ago in that same venue. And I came back, I could barely walk because I had to stand for 2 hours. So I was like, I can't do that again. I'm not going to go see a concert unless I can sit in the stands, because I'm just too goddamn old.
Oh, for sure. Like, I remember I got to roadie for Pearl Jam for a night back when I was in my 20s. Like, I got to go see Pearl Jam for free and just work for the lighting company and put away their gear. Like, I got to do some really cool stuff when I was younger, but now I want to experience all those things comfortable. Yeah. You know, like, I'm old now. I want to just sit and enjoy the show and not just have to fight people the whole time. Like, I remember some Metallica at 18, and it was a fight. TGV says, seen AC/DC with Bon Scott way back in the late 70s. Now, that is awesome. You saw them with Bon Scott? That's crazy.
That is wild. What a legend.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I'd brag about that too. By the way, Mike and I are bitching about being old. If you saw Bon Scott, you're an old timer. Thanks for giving us a listen, man. Yeah,
if you saw Bon Scott, you're my dad's age. So
you are showing us some respect, sir.
Yeah, you're the OG. You're the OG around here.
Correct. Yes, I'm old.
He's like, yes, I'm old. Well, thank you for being here, because I honestly sometimes think that JD and I are talking to a bunch of kids.
I do talk to a bunch of kids every day. Yeah. So that's just how I live. Yeah. So yeah, let's talk Grand Slam.
Yeah. One quick last controversy, and then we'll go through the card. So this just popped up today, this controversy. And it's not even, it's another controversy that's fake. It's not a real controversy.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah. So when they went to Australia, they rented a ring that was local from a local promotion.
Okay.
Which is pretty typical. The ring was like 18 by 18, so it's a little bit smaller than the normal 20 by 20 ring.
It did look smaller on TV, now that you mention it.
So that's the controversy. Just like everybody's talking about it online. So there was this rumor going around that they forgot to bring a ring, and I was hoping that one was true, because because that would be fodder for the show.
It'd be funnier. Yes, it would.
It'd be funnier. And then there were some people talking like that it was possible that they were shipping their ring over, but they didn't ship it in time and it didn't make it in time. So they had to like last minute get a ring, but nobody can confirm that. So, but they rented a ring locally, which is a typical thing that people do when you go overseas, because you're not bringing all of your stuff. You hire a local company to do that. Like, you even hire local wrestling promotions to promote your show for you.
Yes.
That is like, okay, WWE doesn't do that because they're going to all of these places like more often now. So they can have warehouses in all these places, and they can just hire people to bring it to them. But
they didn't when they first started running Australia in the 80s.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Like, okay. So
are we really mad about this?
So QT Marshall confirmed they just got it from PWA. Yeah. Like, people are outraged, not outraged, but they're like trying to use it as a way to make fun of AEW for some reason. I'm just like, what are you even talking about? So the ring was a little bit smaller. It looked like the ring posts were a little bit bent. They're probably warped because it'd been worn so much, but I don't think anybody that wasn't really closely paying attention, looking for something to shit on, would even notice that.
18 by 18, by the way, was the size of a WCW ring. 18 by 18 is the size of the TNA ring. 18 by 18 is the standard size of a professional wrestling ring, except for WWE, New Japan, and AEW. When AEW launched, people, it was like a thing. I remember Sean Ross Sapp confirmed that it was a 20 by 20 ring, and people were like, oh, who fucking cares, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, that's a thing. And it was a thing. Like the standard wrestling ring is 18 by 18. New MLW actually does a 16 by 16 ring, for the record. So like CMLL is an 18 by 18 ring. Like this is fucking cares, man.
Yeah, dude. So many people are talking online about it. 18. QT Marshall is having to defend everything. And I'm like, why would you even defend that? Like, yeah, we rented a local ring. Who cares? It's no big deal. What are we doing?
You saved money by renting a ring rather than shipping your ring to Oceania on the other side of the fucking planet. Do people realize how long it takes to ship stuff by boat?
Yeah.
To Australia? Let's keep in mind, why are there white people in Australia, Mike?
Say that again.
Why are there white people in Australia? Explain.
So I don't want to ruin our friendships with some Australian people, but this is what I think. And I don't know if it's true, so far be it for me to say something that's probably not true. But from what I heard, the Brits send a bunch of prisoners down there, and then the prisoners ended up taking over the indigenous people, and now we got Australia.
The point being, the Brits were so upset with these people, they sent them to the other side of the planet, so they never had to see them again. Right, I'm sure TGV will comment one way there. But, I mean, that's the thing, because it's on the other side of the planet. It's really far. Like, how are we going to shit on a company who said, hey, you know what? We can save massive amounts of money if we just rent all that stuff and use local people and use local gear. And my kid was like, oh, where are the tunnels? I said, buddy, they didn't ship the tunnels. That would cost a fortune. I am a moron, and I figured that out very quickly.
Right.
God damn.
Yeah. And because, you know what? And like, it would take a while to get them back and forth. They have another show on Wednesday. But hold on, Lil Silva, you're a big supporter of ours, and I love you. But you said he can't confirm that TNA rents rings. I can confirm that they rent rings. They rent rings every time they go to a different place, unless it's like within driving distance of their warehouse. So whenever it is a normal thing to do. Like you will hire a local independent promoter. And then you can hire local guys to put up a ring for you. That way you can save costs of shipping. It is a normal thing to do. I know for a fact that when they've done some shows in New York, they have used what is the name of that wrestling school? WrestlePro. They've used WrestlePro's gear. Whenever they were back in the day when they would run Philly, they'd actually use House of Hardcore's gear. Mm-hmm. Whenever they go to Canada, it was always Border City Wrestling stuff because it was Scott DeMore's company, right? Whenever on the West Coast, they didn't use PWG, but I think it was like Pro Wrestling Ultra or something like that. Like they when they would run the West, so I know for a fact that they do. It is 100% normal. I don't know why it's a controversy, because but I felt compelled to talk about it.
I'll tell you why. It's because these people have never run a business and never tried to make ends meet, and never tried to cut never tried to save a dollar. Like if you've ever ran a business, you know, hey, I don't have to spend X, I can spend Y and put a little bit more in my pocket. Like, that's just good business. Why are we shitting on people for being good at business? Like, I don't get this one.
This one's ridiculous. But all right, let's go ahead and talk about the actual show, Grand Slam. I have not watched a lot of collisions lately. And this was essentially a glorified collision. And in fact, I think that was one of the controversies. Like, people thought they were getting a pay-per-view, but it turns out it was just a big collision.
There was problems with the messaging. They did make it seem like it was going to be a pay-per-view, although Grand Slam has always been a TV thing. So maybe there just was confusion to begin with.
Well, I think because they didn't provide any clarity on it, they let people's imaginations go wild. And when that happens, you're going to set people up for disappointment.
Agreed.
So with that and that alone, I think that's the only thing that people can get upset about over there in Australia. Other than that, I thought they had a hell of a show. I thought they did. I thought it was like a home run. again, an episode of Collision that went on after the dunk contest. Dude, did you see the white dude dunking?
I think you know the answer to that question, Mike.
Okay, but like the clip is online. Mac McHonky, I can't remember the guy's name, but he's a super tall white guy, and he's won a few in a row, and he did a dunk over a car. I heard Rich Joe
talk about this. What?
Dude, there was somebody sitting on top of a car with the ball. He jumps up, grabs the ball off top of the car, and dunks it. Okay, I'm getting corrected. Pro wrestling. Mac McClung. Yes.
That name sounds fake as hell. Matt McClung?
Yeah, not Mac McHonky. Sorry, Mac McClung. but he dunked over a car.
That's really impressive.
Yeah. It's worth going out of your way to see.
I'm getting a lot of things saying pull up the video. I've never really followed basketball. Maybe because like wintertime is just wrestling, like wrestling season. So for me, I always have wrestling brain this time of year. So I just never paid attention to basketball, even growing up with the Chicago Bulls. So
yeah, guys, if we were on Patreon right now, I'd just pull up the clip, but we're on YouTube. We'll get nuked. So I can't
be in trouble with that. So
yeah,
I will watch it later.
Yeah. All right. So, let's go ahead and get to the show. I'm not doing the play by play on this. I do that on the Impact stuff, but I don't do that when it's you and I, but, I thought this was a really good show. I had some problems with some of the booking, which I think we'll get into.
We'll get into that. But can I start with this? Cause I got emails recently for being a hater and being anti everything of pro wrestling. I think I might love pro wrestling again after the show. I really liked it. Like, honestly, the opening up with the tag match with Kenny and Ospreay versus Takeshita and Kyle Fletcher, which, by the way, Mark Davis is a heel. Why do they drag their feet on that? Like, that should have happened like right away when he came back. That was stupid. Anyways, I loved it. I loved it. I loved the show. I thought it was great. I had problems with some of the booking stuff too. Won't argue with that. Yeah. But on the whole, I had a good night watching wrestling. My wife was reading a book next to me on the couch while the kid and I were watching the show. You know, she'd pick a look up and roll her eyes occasionally, look back at the book. And I was just like, it was perfect. It was like old times.
Yeah. So the opening match was Kenny Omega and Will Ospreay, the Dream Team, versus Kyle Fletcher and Konosuke Takeshita. And Ospreay and Omega won. And one would, like I said, this was a Dave Meltzer thirst trap match. I get the feeling this is going to get the big five from our favorite uncle. Because they did everything that he loves in a match and that I love in a match. I thought that it was just an outstanding match. And the crowd was hot for it. But I do have one problem with the match. Okay. It's actually before the match started.
Go on.
Kenny Omega. We fucking gotta go back to the other music. We gotta go back. I don't like this fucking Final Fantasy shit he's doing. We gotta go back to the
You want his New Japan music, the Devil's Sky, or do you want the EW? You want the early? I didn't like the Battle Cry. I always thought Battle Cry was far.
Battle Cry.
I always thought Battle Cry was worse than Devil's Sky.
What's that?
Devil's Sky was his music in New Japan, because he has different music in New Japan than he has in AEW. I thought the New Japan music was better. Let's be real. I think Kenny Omega's always had kind of shitty music wherever he's been. Quite frankly,
I like Battle Cry as an entrance song. I like Battle Cry, but with this one, it's just so damn slow. It's one of those things where it's like I was watching the Royal Rumble and people were confused and they waited to cheer until they saw someone's name flash across the screen. That's kind of what happened here. Like, they knew that it was Kenny Omega coming out because he's like Ospreay's partner, but still the music starts so slow and it's got like this slower beat to it. And I'm like, we're getting ready to have this intense match. Like, I don't know. I don't like it. He's got to go back to Battle Cry. That's it. I'm over it.
Yeah. Okay. I can't fight you on that, especially because Ospreay's song. I said, there's nothing my kid loves more than to chant. Hey, comes down to the ring.
Yeah. You're cutting out a little bit, JD.
I'm sorry. I said that, I was saying. It's the elevated song. I'll just.
Yeah. Jumanji Hunter says Ospreay's song is sick. Yeah, I agree. But yeah, Kenny Omega and Will Ospreay get the victory there. They did a combination Hidden Blade and One Winged Angel on Takeshita and got the pin there. I thought that was great. And then afterwards they set up, we're going to get Kenny Omega versus Takeshita at Revolution, and we're going to get Will Ospreay versus Kyle Fletcher in a steel cage at Revolution. I mean, fucking count me in. All right, I think I lost JD again.
I'm back.
You're back. Okay. All right. Second match was Mercedes Moné versus Harley Cameron. And Harley Cameron was so freaking over in this match. I thought this was a really good match. Harley Cameron's way better than she has any right being at this point in her career. Then, you know, obviously Mercedes Moné. Look, here's my thing with Mercedes Moné. I think she's a good worker, but I also think at the same time she's super sloppy. She reminds me of, and our Aussie, I think he's South African, but it reminds me of UFC fighter Dricus Duplessis. He's the middleweight champion right now. Everything he does looks like crap, but it's effective and it works, and he always wins his matches. That's what Mercedes Moné reminds me of. All of her moves look terrible, but people get into her matches and she's over. So what am I, you know, I got nothing to complain about. Like, in the match, it was really good. So, like, at the same time, it's like, yeah, everything she does doesn't look good, but it still works for whatever reason. Like, it's hard to explain. But Moné got the victory. She used her moneymaker finisher that botches every time. She's got to call it quits on that finisher. She can't do it. It sucks.
Sucks.
And I felt that Harley Cameron went to the puppet too many times. Okay, one time with the puppet, you didn't need to go back to it twice. But they're trying to get the puppet over, so.
Trying to get the puppet over the. It was a little overbooked, but I think maybe you do need some smoke and mirrors. So with Harley, right to be, she's super big time over in Australia too, which of course makes perfect sense. I think they made a mistake. I think they should Harley have a banana peel win, just for that title, because I think that going later in the show, Tony wins. I think the biggest match they have in the women's division is Tony and Mercedes.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And looks like they're setting up Mercedes Moné versus Momo Watanabe. And you guys can go ahead and unsubscribe right now, because I did not know who Momo Watanabe was until they told me who that was. I was like, oh, that's who that is. Okay. So clearly not a Joshi guy. So, but it looks like they're going to set that match up. I just hope they don't put it in the main event, because it'll die. All right. Jumanji Hunter says, I hope they continue to use Harley after this. Well, yeah, she works there. She's not going away. She's super over. So I don't think she's going anywhere after
she's
that.
She's one of their biggest stars.
Yeah, she's not going anywhere. And then I believe the next match was the Brisbane street fight was Moxley and Claudio Castagnoli versus Cope and one Jay White. And it was every brawl you've ever seen, but it was still pretty fun. I really enjoyed it. I loved the beginning of it whenever the Aussies were all singing Metalingus in unison. I thought that was a cool moment. I really dug that part. John Moxley choked out Cope to get the victory. Tons of interference. Like I said, it was, you know, whatever you want to call it, House of Torture, Bloodline. It was all that bullshit, but it was still pretty fun. So curious booking here. Why would they choke out Cope when he's about to be the challenger for the world title at the next pay-per-view?
It looks strong. That I think maybe they can write it off as tons of interference in the match, but he didn't quit. You know, he choked out, but I don't know, man. I don't think this heats up the Copeland Moxley match at all.
No. Yeah. I was already struggling with caring about the match anyway. And then this made me care even less, to be honest with you. Like I just don't quite understand. And I think they're trying to make it seem like Cope is going to win, like a reverse psychology deal. But I don't think that's going to work, at least not for me.
Sell tickets. Sleep. This one.
JD, I need you to go out and come back in, man. I think we're losing. Yep, we lost JD. All right, I am flying solo, so let me go ahead and get to the chat here. Jumanji Hunter says Willow and Chris have disappeared. Yeah, that is weird. I think Willow's going to be spending some time in Japan, so she might be on loan over there. Chris Taylor, I don't know. So the thing with Chris is she was a heel. She had that heel feud with Willow and then all of a sudden turned babyface so she could, because Mercedes Moné wanted to work with her. And right now what they're just doing is they're just setting up people that Moné likes so she can beat them. And that looks like what they're doing with Momo Watanabe. They've done that with several other stars. And Chris Statlander happens to be one of those people. Moné just wanted to work with her. And it's like, well, we can't have her work with her if she's a heel. So we have to turn her babyface, even though she just turned heel. So they flipped her babyface. She lost the match, and now she's nowhere to be found. And then Willow is just like, you know, in Japan. So I don't know what's going on with Willow. Who knows when she's coming back. But Jameson Fletcher said Chris looks to be feuding with Mega Bane. That's right. They did have a face-off probably on Wednesday, but I did not see Wednesday's show. But I think that would be fun. All right. Who better adjusted talent leaving AEW, WWE, TNA, or New Japan Pro Wrestling? I'll be honest. I'm going to give a little bit of a shot. I mean, New Japan historically has been the best at like losing talent and having like the people, like the next man up mentality, having people ready to go. But the last couple of years, that has not been the case.
I think it's starting TNA to now, man.
Yeah, they're going to now. TNA has actually perfected it because they get rated twice a year, so they constantly have to replenish their roster. So they just got rated again. Josh Alexander is going to AEW, so they're constantly having to replenish their roster.
Pressure at the moment that it's felt in probably 3 or 4 years, like Goto, elevation of Gabe Kidd, and what they've done with stuff lately, and the return of Yuya Uemura, like fresher than it's felt in a long time.
Yeah. I'm actually really interested in New Japan. I actually reviewed on Patreon. Shout out Patreon, patreon.com/TheMikeAndJDShow. Not the entire show of New Beginnings, but I actually like recapped a few of the matches from that show because Goto won the world title. I gotta watch, right? I gotta watch the match. Yeah. So it was fantastic. Yeah, it was shocking.
That's like one of the best feel-good moments in pro wrestling and like a long, long time. Like Hiroki Goto finally winning the world title is awesome.
Yeah. Controversial statement, but that is my match of the year so far. I know everybody's gonna be like, well, Mike, Kenny Omega versus Gabe Kidd just happened. Yeah, I know, but that didn't have the emotion that this match had. I was not as emotionally invested in that match that I was in this match. I know the other match, you know, what was bloody went longer. It was tremendous. I still loved it. But this match was far more emotional, I thought.
So. Felt it. Like that one. So I think it was Rich and Joe compared it to, they compared it to Ron Simmons winning the WCW world title.
Yeah.
With the kids storming and just wanting to be part of the moment. Like that was special.
Yeah. All right. Well, JD's back. Let's go ahead and finish our Grand Slam recap.
Sorry, man. This fucking Wi-Fi, this rural internet just kills me sometimes.
Yeah.
I got the blue light. We should be good.
Yeah. All right. So we got Buddy Matthews took on Kazuchika Okada. Nobody in the world thought Buddy was winning, but I still thought that they had a pretty good match. Okada, like, turned it on for this match, but you could tell, like, he's not really – how do I say this without sounding mean?
He's not watched. Like people are like, oh, Okada's watched. Oh,
he's not.
Phrase. No, he's not watched.
He's not. But he's also not in his – he's also not in his best physical shape either. Like,
no, I agree with that.
I feel like he's just really enjoying himself right now. He's making a lot of money, you know, and like occasionally he can turn it on when he needs to. And, you know, they had 11,000 people and in Buddy's, not even his hometown, his home country. So he knew that the crowd would be there. So he kind of turned it on and Buddy really wanted to have a good match. But I just feel like, you know, we got a little bit of the older.
I kind of wonder if this isn't the 2018 Shinsuke Nakamura version of Okada.
I think we're getting there because now Nakamura right now is unwatchable on TV.
Oh yeah, but he was still pretty good in 2018. But he wasn't in 2015. You know.
Right. Yeah. I think we're slowly getting there. Because it just seemed like he is just a bit disinterested at times. Like I said, he turned it on here. So I got to give him credit. It was still a really good match. Hell, he had one of the best matches of the year just 2 months ago at World's End with Will Ospreay.
When he wants to,
he can turn it on. But
Can
it's,
I tell you?
It's crazy, but this was one of those moments. So
I'm gonna be honest with you. I've been hard on Buddy for a long time. I used to call him a Kenny Omega clone. I used to be really, yeah, I kind of is. But I mean, like, I was always, because I always thought Malakai Black was such a dork malcontent that I kind of lumped Buddy into that. And I really think that there's new life in this guy right now.
Yeah.
Like, he does seem like he's reinvigorated. It does seem like now that he's committed to the company and not have that albatross of Black around him, and that they're all kind of doing something new. It does seem like there's a new zest for life in his work lately that really shined. I thought Buddy Matthews was a star here, and they could have something. I think him and Brody should be wrestling for those tag belts, because the tag division just needs a shot of life. And Brody's super underutilized to begin with, Brody King.
Yeah.
I think it's time to really do something with these guys, man. I really do.
Yeah, I think they're great. I do think that Buddy does lack some originality. To say the least, like, you could tell he's like, hey, I'm going to pull from, he pulls from CM Punk. He pulls from Kenny Omega. He pulls from Ospreay. He kind of just pulls from his favorite wrestlers and tries to create his own style. And look, he's not alone in that, but I think just sometimes it's pretty obvious with him.
But I think that's why he could work better in a tag team with Brody King, where Brody King is so unique, right? Brody King's got a flair and a style all his own. I don't think he's limited. But I think together with Julia, like, I think you have something with the tag division that I think the sum is probably better than the parts.
Yeah.
Right. I think they got to go with it. House Hell is kind of a lame name, but I think you got to pull a trigger on them, because you need a shot in the arm in the tag division right now.
Yeah, we do. I mean, we got Lashley and Shelton. They just took over.
It's fine, but they need someone to work. They need someone to feud with, right? Like,
I know. Well, they're going to have the match with Archer and Cage, and I'm just like, Archer and Cage are not over.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, they need someone. I think that, dude, you can't tell me that Bobby Lashley and Brody King doesn't sound fucking awesome to you, right? Yeah. And Shelton Benjamin and Buddy Matthews, that just, like, that sounds great. Like, I want to see that, right?
Yeah.
So I think that could be, I think that is, Hurt Business works in AEW, or Hurt Syndicate works in AEW. Like, it's been really good. It's been effective. They're over. Like, okay, I was not on board. I'm okay right now. But they need someone to work with. And I think having someone opposite, that they're both Buddy and Brody are really good workers, I think you can have something here. I really do.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. All right. Main event time. Well, Okada won that, by the way. But main event time. Tony Storm versus Mariah May. Tony Storm got her title belt back. Guys, I got to be honest. I'm not saying that it was the fault of the match, because this just happened to me during two other wrestling shows this week. I tried to watch Raw and I fell asleep. During Impact this week, I started watching Impact at 8:30 p.m. And the opening match was Joe Henry versus Jake Something. I fell asleep during Jake Something's entrance. Okay. So, like, I'm just trying to give you, like, a little, and then I woke up and I ended up finishing the show. And then I had to get up the next day and, like, try to watch some of the stuff that I missed. I saw the beginning of this match. I saw parts of the middle and I caught the end, but I did doze off several times during the match. So I don't want to say it's the fault of the match, but because from what I'm hearing, it's getting rave reviews everywhere. I just, unfortunate for me. And I tried to rewatch the match today and we just had so much shit going on. And then every time I tried to, you know, get everybody out of the house so I could sit down and watch it, I got kids, I got babies, I got wife, I got other neighborhood kids coming over. I have not been able to finish watching the match, but from what I hear, it was great. Tony Storm is champ again.
Tony Storm characters is not for me. Like, I had a real hard time getting into this, and it's not the fault of the work. It's just like, I don't like her shtick. I haven't. It's just not for me. I'm not saying it's bad, because it was fine. Like, it was all right. I enjoyed Mercedes and Harley Cameron more, you know, and put that on me. You know, that's fine. I'll be honest. I just don't think Tony Storm is for this Tony Storm is for me anymore. So, but I get why they did it. I get why it main evented. I understand the whole thing. I'm not critical on it. I'm not saying I didn't like it. It just wasn't for me, but it made complete and total sense in the moment. It is what it is.
Yeah. And I thought the story was pretty good as far as, like, a beginning to end story. The part that worries me is that it was a roll up finish. So I'm thinking maybe,
oh God, maybe please end this.
Maybe that Revolution, they're going to run that one back again. So
they, like, can. Okay, Revolution's pretty short down the road. So yeah. I would be okay with them running it back and then being done with it. I think you do have to go with Tony and Mercedes because that is the biggest match that they could do. That's why I advocated for Harley to beat Mercedes for that TBS title, just so you can kind of move Mercedes into the women's title. Because I think she's the biggest star, right? And she should have that title. It just makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Jumanji says it's a 3.75 star rating.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, 3.75 means a great match. Like, I think we've kind of lost the plot on what a good match really is. Like, a 3.75 match should be like, that's an excellent match. I wouldn't give it a 3.75. For me, it's a 2.75, which is still a good match. Like, we've lost the plot on Dave Meltzer's rating scale. Like, we're a 5.
It's his fault.
It is his fault.
Yeah. I love Dave. He should have never won above 5. Once he did that, I was just like, the whole thing just got blown up from there. And now it's like, if you have a 5-star, it's like, well, why wasn't it 6? You know?
Well, and if you have a 4, it's like, why wasn't it 5? You have a 3, again, 3.75 is supposed to be an excellent match, but we're shitting on it. Not shitting on it, but we're both like, eh. And like, and we get a, what's a 3.75? Well, 3.75, that should be like an excellent, excellent match. Like, go back in the annals of the Observer and look at stuff that's rated 3.75. Those are good matches.
Yeah.
I just don't think we know. I think I blame Dave because, again, like, I also blame Amazon, right, where they say, hey, give it a 5-star review. Give it a 5-star review. A 5-star review is supposed to be perfect, right? And I just think we've lost the idea of what perfect means.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, yeah, again, I thought Grand Slam was great. It was a really enjoyable show. It was probably the best episode of Collision that I've ever seen.
I agree with that.
I'm trying to think back at previous Collision episodes, and I'm like, I can't remember the one being this good. I'm sure there was, but I don't watch a ton of Collision. So for them to get me to watch Collision, that means they did a pretty good job and I really enjoyed it. So there was some other news out there in pro wrestling that has to do with AEW. This is not an AEW podcast, but we went AEW heavy tonight cause they had the show. One Richard Starks debuted with NXT, even though he was released like 2 days prior. But
did Ricky Starks debut with NXT?
They're not saying the guy's name. No. I don't know if he's going to have his Ricky Starks name or not. I think he owns the name, but they also have Zoe Starks on the main roster. And I'm like, well, maybe they don't want him to have his name. It's not that unusual to have two people with the same last name. Like, you know, Adam Cole and Michael Cole were working in the same company. Nobody got confused there, but, but I don't know. Are they going to let him keep his name? And do you think this is a good fit for Ricky?
I'll be honest with you. I think a lot of the people that talked up, I like Ricky Starks. I always have. I think he got vastly overrated by the internet wrestling community because like he kind of became like, he's a good talker.
Yeah,
he's solid in the ring.
Yep.
Like, I wouldn't say, like, I think that a bit people like, hey, you gotta push him more. Bell to Bell, he's nowhere near the top of that company when he was in AEW. You know, here's a hot take. I think Ricky Starks was used just fine for most of his run.
I mean, he beat CM Punk, right? In the Owen Hart tournament. He was the tag team champion for a while. And they had a disagreement, and I'm not going to say Ricky Starks was a bad guy for disagreeing because I don't know what the creative was. Right. Word is that they wanted him to feud with Big Bill, and he was going to beat Big Bill, and he didn't want to do that to Bill. So I don't know how true that is or what. I don't, you know, but that's been out there in certain places. So I'm like, okay, but that's not that big of a disagreement to keep the guy off TV for a year. And what they did is they kind of made him into a martyr.
They did,
He got bigger and bigger and bigger from there. I like Ricky. I think Ricky's a good worker. He's a great talker. I think he could be a star. He is not a star. That's why he's in NXT because they're going to treat him like a star. And then if he can get over at a sustained level for a long time, he will be more accepted on the main roster. If they brought that man to the main roster, he is not Pentagon. Pentagon has been a star on television for a long time. He is not the same level. And if they brought Ricky Starks in, I don't think most of those people would know who he was.
I think if he showed up at the Royal Rumble or something, people would know who he is. But I also think that Ricky's fine. You know, I think that you define him down by debuting him in NXT. Like, you're treating him like Sean Spears and Ethan Page. And I think he's definitely above those guys. But at the same time, I think that he's definitely not as hot as he would have been. And I think you're defining him down by putting him in NXT, and maybe that's where he belongs right now. Yeah. I was thinking with Tony too, is that like, he is a guy who's been photographed. He's Cody's buddy. Yeah. Like he was Punk's buddy. So, I mean, like, he's friends with a lot of those guys. And I think it sounded like he was unwilling to commit long-term. So Tony said, okay, if you're unwilling to commit long-term, I'm not going to put you on TV. Right. Which I kind of get, you know, you had one Malakai Black who ate up a lot of, you invested a lot of TV time in over the last couple of years, who really gave you nothing. So yeah. I think it just became a poor marriage after a while. Sometimes you need to split, and it just doesn't work. I do think they made Ricky a martyr. I think that Tony has learned something, because we had AEW releases this week, right? Yeah. Miro's out. Tony, yep. Ricky Starks is out. Bear Bronson, which bear got released, but
that was for a domestic violence.
For sure. You had to, but like, it all kind of happened at once. And it's like, they're finally starting to just be okay. Fine. Get up. Just go. Yeah. Just go.
I think what AEW needs is Doge to come in there and get rid of a lot of people that ain't doing much. So, like,
they get rid of the nuclear inspectors that actually were doing something and then scramble to bring it back because we're too stupid to realize what we're doing.
I would not recommend getting rid of the nuclear inspectors. just from a guy that's worked on a nuke base, like, we need those guys. Trust me. Like,
well, maybe we should really.
Yeah. Coming from a guy who had to do nuclear surety inspections through that federal agency, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, they're very important. Don't get rid of them. And I had to do nuclear response exercises, and we need those guys. But I'm kidding about the Doge. But I do think that, like, he shouldn't be afraid, because he's afraid of. And I don't know Tony personally, but this is my read on the situation, just based off of what I'm seeing and what we read in reports. Right? He doesn't want anybody to compare him to, like, Vince, because Vince was firing people left and right. They just, like, Triple H just did it again. They fired like 10 people. Mm-hmm. Right. And you look at the list, everybody's like, okay, that makes sense. But they fired a lot of people during the pandemic, and it left with bad taste in everybody's mouths. And he wanted to be the guy that was like, look, I'm going to fulfill these obligations no matter what. And
there's a backside of that. When you fulfill people's obligations no matter what, you wind up keeping a lot of people who really don't want to be there, who become negative influences in your locker room. And then they say, well, fine, we'll just not bring them here. And then they become martyrs. Like Miro. Yeah. Miro didn't want to do anything. Miro had the Redeemer run was great. But after that,
awesome.
He became like a pain in the ass. So then it becomes, but again, because we're in a culture war with professional wrestling, it becomes, why is it Miro on TV? Miro should go back to WWE, where he was miserable.
Right, where, like, he was cuckolded on TV.
Literally, right. He was literally a cuckold on TV. Like, and maybe at some point, maybe the problem is you. Like, right. Andrade couldn't wait to go back to WWE. He went back to WWE, got divorced, and has the Speed title.
Yeah, yeah. And he came out on Royal Rumble 1 year later, and nobody cared.
Yeah,
and so, I mean, and like, the funny thing is, here's the sad thing about Andrade. He's fucking great. He really is great.
He's his own worst enemy.
He's his own worst enemy. And when he left WWE the first time, he was flipping them off on the way out. He went to AEW, and he was trying to beat up Sammy Guevara to get out of there, and finally got out of there. And now he's back in WWE, and he is essentially an afterthought just 1 year later.
I mean, because he doesn't matter. I mean, like, because he's a pain in the ass. They wanted Andrade back, one, probably to make Charlotte happy, which wound up didn't matter. And two, yeah, just stick it to Tony a little bit. Now they're like, oh, fine, we'll just give him the Speed title, do whatever. Like, yeah, it doesn't, they're fine. Let those guys go. They don't help you in the long run. Like, and having Andrade in AEW, he had some good matches on occasion, but did it really help you? I mean, like, they have too many guys under contract now. Like, I would love to see more Roosh. I don't know if Roosh is hurt again or what, but I think
Roosh is having similar problems that Andrade had when he was there.
Yeah, I mean, because that's what they have everywhere they go.
Yeah.
Like, you sign guys that have reputations. When they first opened and Jim Cornette was bitching about All Friends Wrestling, everybody was happy and there were no problems, right? Then they started signing people with some questionable attitudes, and all of a sudden you had problems. So you tell me what was better for that company, when it was all friends wrestling or when everybody hated each other and stuff started to fall apart. Like, you gotta build the right team. Remember Miracle? What a great movie. Like, it's not about finding the right guys, not about finding the best guys.
Yeah. You got to find the best guys that fit your system, right?
Exactly.
And that fit your culture, big team guys. Great football teams. And then you mentioned Miracle, a hockey movie, same concept. Great football teams, when they're going to the draft and they're doing the interviews with these people, they will draft somebody that has lesser athleticism because they feel like they're going to fit their culture. Yep. That versus the guy that they think is going to be a prima donna, right? Yep. And I think when WWE released all those guys, Miro, Malachi, Andrade, Buddy Matthews was one of those guys where we felt like maybe he would have been, he was a malcontent for a little bit. He seems like he's doing great now, but back in the day, we kind of thought that. I really think Vince saw this coming. He, because it happened in the 90s with WCW. He's like, we're going to lose all these guys. And that kid over there, he probably, because, you know, Vince is like 75 years old at the time. So that kid over there is not going to be able to resist bringing those guys in, right? Even though whenever they created AEW, Tony Khan was on Chris Jericho's podcast saying that we're not going to sign too many people. We're not out to sign everybody. We're here to sign the right people. And then all those people got released, and then they became the company of the surprise debut, and that became their go-to. They're doing surprise debut after surprise debut, and they were going to be like this big charitable professional wrestling organization. They're going to bring everybody in. You can have a home here. Bring us your tired, your hungry, and poor, right? Like it was a Statue of Liberty of fucking pro wrestling. And then they came all over there. They signed up a bunch of bad apples that kind of spoiled the whole barrel. And finally, it took him years, but he's finally slowly starting to get rid of those guys. And really, he should have done it 2 years ago. But look, 100%. We're here now. And so I'm glad that we're here now. Next on the list, Fenix. I think Fenix is probably going to be out within the next month or so.
And look what happened now. Fenix is going to be way cooler coming in than he would have been a couple. I mean, cool as in, you know, like not as hot. Because Penta's already working on main event. Is Dave LaGreca mad about that, by the way? Is Dave LaGreca bitching about Penta being on main event? I don't know.
I don't know, because here's probably LaGreca's thinking. Penta was on Raw too that night. He just didn't wrestle on Raw, but he did do a segment on Raw. Mm-hmm. But he wrestled on main event, so that's probably what they're thinking.
Yeah, they're figuring out that Penta's a little bit like Monet, you know.
I like Penta, but that me man too. He's a botch machine, but
always has been. his whole career he's been like that.
He's kind of like Sabu, just less dangerous.
Slightly less dangerous. Yeah. Like, no, agreed. He's very, I love Sabu. Part of the charm is, oh, is he going to fuck up? Yep. Like, yeah. So, I mean, I agree. Tony has to, and this is part of the growing pains with like working with people, is you got to learn things. Cause Vince had those same mistakes too. There's been times in WWE, there were tons of malcontents in there, and Vince poisoned the well. Yeah. Remember we had a discussion with a buddy of ours, and he said, like, I think Vince is doing this on purpose to try to, because they remember all friends wrestling, everybody was happy. Now we're going to introduce a lot of poison. That's like, remember Vince's NWO promo?
Yeah.
Poison. Yeah.
And you know what? What happened when he brought Hall and Nash and Hogan in? Immediately, locker room revolted, right? Immediately.
Yep.
Like, it took a while to kind of rebuild that culture there. They had to get rid of Scott because he was obviously he had his problems. Nash did them a favor by getting hurt. They put the title on Hogan, and then that went south quick. They had to pull the title right off of him. Mm-hmm. Like they learned a lot of lessons by bringing those guys back in. But Vince said it himself. He has the quote. Perhaps I'll give them some more when talking about the talent that AEW has been signing. Right.
Tony couldn't resist, and he's got people in his ear saying, "You gotta get this guy. You gotta get that guy." Sometimes some of those signings work out pretty good. I think if people are harder on Cope than I am, I kind of around. I think having on when he's up, I think having I can watch some of the stuff I missed, I think those have been good pickups. Like, if you get guys that want to play ball and actually want to make that company better, sure. Yeah. But then you get a bunch of guys who think they're too cool for school, your Andrades, your Malachis, your Miros, like, all you're doing is fucking up your own stuff. CM Punk, you had to take that risk. In retrospect, I don't know, man. I don't know if that risk was worth it or not.
Yeah.
You know, you were cooler before you had. I mean, they were a cool company They were the upper company before Punk came in. Punk put them over the top. And then at the end of the day, you know, you it's the scorpion and the frog thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you knew what I was when we started this journey. And now, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think Tony fucked himself on a lot of these things.
Well, signing all those people allowed them to have a roster big enough with enough stars to be able to take on Collision. And I think that ultimately, despite the fact that they got extra money for it, a lot of fucking money, right? It led to this big TV deal that they have. But the content over time started to degrade, which degraded ticket sales. And so it became a whole issue. But it looks like they're starting to kind of get their wind out of their sails again. They've had several episodes in a row right now that are looking really good. They just did 11,000. Obviously, it was overseas, so brand new market in Brisbane. So hopefully they can get things back on track and start doing good again in the States.
Pull up the last comment by TGV. I want to dispute this because I don't think he's listened to us from back then, from when we talked about
this. You won't like this. However, CM Punk wanted to do right by AEW. However, the issue was the friends of friends that caused issues. So, look, there's a lot of wrong people in that situation. CM Punk wasn't the only wrong one. I think the Young Bucks were not cool with the way that they did the silent treatment, were very passive aggressive and all mm-hmm. that stuff. Tony Khan sucks as a leader. He mm-hmm. does not know how to manage people, especially like alpha males and creative people. That's why he's not the head coach of the Jaguars, right? He is this data analytics guy, right? He's not out there coaching them players. So I think there were a lot of wrong people. The guy that was the most wrong was CM Punk. He was in control of the situation. He's the veteran. He could have not done what he did. Yet he still did it, and I think rightfully so, he was fired. That doesn't mean that other people weren't wrong, too. He just happened to be the most wrong.
Yeah, and this is kind of the point we made, is everybody was wrong in this situation, and we were more pro-punk than most of our brethren for a lot of this stuff.
JD, who is your favorite wrestler? Who did you, other than Sting, who are you dressing up for as Halloween?
CM Punk.
CM Punk. His profile picture for the longest time was him in a CM Punk t-shirt, dressed as CM Punk. Sure. For Halloween. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Thanks for bringing that up. No, I mean, like, and again, like it's one of the most fucking heartbreaking things. Fucking Mark. Totally. It's totally true. The way he handled it, like, you know, he was very political behind the scenes, yeah. right? Like he aired dirty laundry on television that didn't need to be done. Right.
Yeah.
He tanked a lot of things that didn't need to happen. Like Paige had like, trying to fire him and Cole Cabana, letting their beef become part of the company is a problem, right? Yeah. He could have taken the high road numerous times and chose not to. The Young Bucks could have buried some shit a long time ago, chose not to. The only guy who got sucked into this whole thing, everybody kind of admit, was Kenny Omega. You know, Kenny Omega is just trying to be there, and he wound up in a bunch of shit, and he was like, what the hell? Why am I in trouble for all this stuff? Like,
yeah.
And again, it's like you let a lot of outside influences ruin this thing. And CM Punk's my favorite wrestler. I could listen to him his promos forever. But he wasn't the same guy after he broke his foot. Yeah. Realistically speaking, like when he broke his foot and he let a lot of his mental demons fester, that was the problem. Mm-hmm. And he's a guy who just can't be happy. And we got little birdies telling us he's not so happy over at WWE all the time either. So, you know, can't always be somebody else's fault,
right? Yeah, everywhere he goes, he takes himself with him. So
that's the problem with all of us, is everywhere we go, we take ourselves with us, mm-hmm. right? So all your baggage gets pulled in, no matter what situation you're in. Dude, I got in a fight with a referee today because I got to go with me everywhere I go, and I have to be an asshole everywhere I go. So I mean, like,
yeah,
it just is what it is.
Yeah. So last thing before we get out of here, I'm sure you didn't even hear about this, but. So TNA, they were in a little bit of chaos this week, and it was again fake chaos. There was no real chaos. They fired Christy Hemme, who was their marketing senior vice president of marketing.
Was she and really?
Since October,
I had no idea.
They just brought her in October. She had been working with the company for like 20 years in different positions, and she was out there. She's back in. She's been kind of been in and out, and so they recently brought her up to do some marketing, head the marketing department. Well, okay. they fired her, and they fired Josh Matthews, who was a kind of a television producer for them. So they actually hired this guy George Veras, who has been working in the NFL, CBS, ABC, NBC. He was the head of production for the NFL Today, and was most recently working with the NFL Hall of Fame. They hired him as their head of production. So he is kind of like their Lee Fitting for like WWE. They modeled the new structure. So they brought in their version of a Lee Fitting, which is George Varus, right? This guy that's got his own production company. He's kind of a big time guy. They brought in another lady named Andrea Panganelli, who's coming over from she's done NFL, Major League Baseball. She was most recently with the professional cycling to be their marketing manager. They brought in the old Ring of Honor director, Mark Brown, I think. Guys in the chat, correct me if I think it's Mark Brown. So they hired a new director of television. They're all starting up this coming up week. They are looking like a real company, and it's fucking weird. What are your thoughts, JD?
These are great hires. Like, these are professional hires. The problem with pro wrestling is we always assume that people in pro wrestling should be working in pro wrestling.
Ding, 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 ding. You nailed it right there.
Like, we don't think about, does this person actually have skills like to do the job that they're doing? Now, it doesn't mean they don't have those skills just because they're in pro wrestling. But, like, why was Christy Hemme the head of marketing?
Yeah. So, and that was my, like, I'm not saying that Christy Hemme wasn't a good marketing person. In fact, I thought that the marketing department actually seemed like it was improving, you know, based off of some of the ticket sales they were doing, some of the houses they were doing, it felt like it was improving, but they brought in somebody that's got like legit, like worldwide experience on a high level to do it. And it's like, that's like a no brainer. I get the feeling Christy might've like, you know, took some classes and stuff like that. I heard that about Josh Matthews too, like he took some classes. And was doing some like TV stuff for them, but they brought in a guy that's got like 40 years experience to run their production now and has like a full team. So it's like, it's weird to sit here and say that TNA is starting to resemble like a real well-managed professional wrestling company. And it's taken them since Anthem purchased it in 2017, it's taken them all these years.
I don't know. I'd debate it wasn't even a well-managed wrestling company when Dixie was running it, quite frankly.
Like, well, yeah, but the production was always like pretty decent, although they did have they did have a guy from World Class who was missing a lot of shots, but
Keith Mitchell,
yeah.
Keith Mitchell is just, that's just Keith Mitchell, man. That's just you know, he was like that in WCW and World Class, it's just Keith Mitchell. I'm happy for TNA. Like they finally, Anthem said, "Hey, you know what? We have this thing, let's just like try." You know, and it took them years to go, "Okay, fine, let's just try." And it's been better for the company. Like, I still have no interest in it. It's just not for me. But I'm happy. You seem like a lot happier covering TNA lately. Like, the people that cover, like, a lot of our fans are just TNA fans. So they seem like in a much better place with it. So good for them.
Well, like, look, I can't get everything that I want. But a lot of the things that they can control. Because what I want them to do is book everything the way that I want them to book it, right? Which is just never going to happen. So that's like unreasonable. But for years we talked about it. Like they need to upgrade their production. They need a real production team instead of like using like interns and like
we used to bitch. We used to bitch on Brace for Impact about them not white balancing the cameras. Yeah. Like we're so far from that right now. Like it was like watching Big Ten student network shows.
Yeah.
Like I watch Big Ten networks. That's what wrestling is. It's always the student produced stuff that goes that you watch, you know, wrestling on the Big Ten network. And they were awful. And that's what watching Impact felt like for a long time. And if they're getting back to being professional again, good for them. Like, but again, like I was saying before, I think we just assume that wrestling people can do wrestling jobs. It's like people that were real upset that Maria Kanellis wasn't the booker of Ring of Honor. And it's like, why would you think that Maria can, I mean, who, I think it's someone who else has been fired from every job she's ever had in professional wrestling. Let us not forget that everywhere she's worked, it's been, thank you, Maria. Goodbye. Everywhere. Multiple times with some companies. Like, why would we assume because she booked a tournament once that she should be booking? I just don't understand. Like, I get it. We want female voices in wrestling, but I think we want it to the point where we want familiar faces having these positions. Like that guy, like I remember someone said, Brian Danielson should be the booker. Why? What makes you think that should
happen? What territory did he ever book? And now you want him to book the number two professional wrestling company in the world?
Yeah. And I don't understand why we just assume because people are in the, maybe it's just a Jim Cornette thing where back in the day, like not everyone that booked was great at booking back then too. I want people to tell me why Colonel Buck Robley was a phenomenal booker. I'd love you to tell me why. You can't, because all you have is what somebody else said about him 30 years ago. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like, you don't know that these things worked. Like, it's just, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. When someone gets hired for like a creative position, I'm just like, okay, what was the idea that they had that you liked? Can you spell it out for me? And nobody really can do that. So I'm like, it's hard for me to advocate, but with these hires, at least in the marketing and when in the production, like, I don't know if these guys can produce or market wrestling. I have no idea. Maybe they're going to stink. But what I do know is I can read their resume. It's like they got a track record of success that nobody that they've ever hired before actually has, like mainstream, like professional sporting success.
Isn't that what we want from people? Like, think about if you're getting a job in the real world. Like, if I were to walk in to, I don't know, Goldman Sachs and say, hey, I want a job here, and they're looking at my resume, they're like, well, you're a cameraman and you were a teacher, so why would we hire you? Yeah. And I just be like, well, because I'm cool, you should hire me. Like, that's just kind of what it feels like to me. Like, well, I used to cut interviews on TV. I should absolutely be telling you how to run your television production. What? Right. Like, it doesn't make sense.
Christy Hemme's like, well, I did wrestle for a while and I did the ring announcing. Of course I know how to market, right? It's like, well,
that's what I'm saying.
What marketing firm are we hiring you from? You're not actually from a marketing firm. And look, I'm not trying to say anything bad about Christy Hemme. I think she probably did a pretty good job.
We could pick on Josh Matthews too. I don't understand why Josh Matthews should be running the television department, you know?
Right. So I'm like, I got nothing against Christy Hemme. I think it's an emotional thing because everybody likes her. I certainly do. I liked her on TV for a long time. But the problem is like, I don't know that she was good or not. I just don't know. But I can tell you is the person they hired is good because look at the resume. Right. They got the resume. And that's so dude, people like these Anthem people. And here's the difference between like Anthem right now with the people they have in charge. So they got it basically set up with Carlos Silva as the president, Ariel Scherner. He is like the de facto Triple H of the company. And they brought in George Ferris, who's basically their lead fitting. He's in charge of all the production. Right. They have these are people that are business minded. They're not pro wrestling lifers. And if you're not good at your job, they're just going to get rid of you. They don't care. They're like, that's a professional organization. Whereas before, under the previous regime, it seemed like it was more of a mom and pop shop. They had the next man up mentality. It's like, well, hey, we lost this person in production. Well, we'll just train up the next person. Instead, they decided, no, we're just going to hire professionals.
I have to pull this up. I have Mike. I'm a bad person.
Okay. What happened?
Dream Ultra Crazy says, why did Triple H get the head job of creative? He's an average booker at best. We all know the answer to that question.
Yeah. Well, he married the boss's daughter, right? Got invited to a lot of booking meetings. But here's the thing. He also just won back-to-back Booker of the Year in the Wrestling Observer newsletter. Now, you can say that's a bullshit title, but a lot of people are praising Tony Khan for winning that. Mm-hmm. So he's won it back-to-back years. So business is good for them.
I think he's a meat and potatoes booker myself, but sometimes there's a reason why meat and potatoes are good.
Yeah.
Right. It's not, I have problems with WWE and their creative.
Godzilla's
doing a bad job. Godzilla's in the chat.
He's in the chat. He said, happy belated born day to the big homie JD.
Thanks,
Godzilla. Godzilla does our theme song. So thank you for being here, Godzilla. As long as he's not in here talking football, he's allowed to stay. But he starts talking football, he's fucking gone. I can't handle it.
He gets to talk some shit.
Dude, he's been fucking unbearable.
I mean, like, that's what happens when your team wins. You get to talk shit. I mean, I live in Chicago, so I will never, ever get to talk shit about anything. So I just have to sit there and listen to everybody else talk shit about it and just sit there and go, we suck. Mm-hmm.
But all right, guys, that I ended the show burying Godzilla, which is my favorite thing to do. So we have gone over time. So that's going to do it for us this week. Head over to patreon.com/TheMikeAndJDShow. If JD and I can't get together in the middle of the week, I'll probably just do my own thing, but we should really get to an overtime soon. But I did do like a full hour in the middle of the week, a full blown episode doing that.
I got 1 week left of high school wrestling season. Okay. 1 week left of high school wrestling season. It's limping toward its finish, and then life will open up a lot more for me. As I explained to my college professor this past week in an email, like, I just need some time.
Yeah. Ella says, I pay you $5 a month to bury me. It's like, Yeah. Yeah. No, he buries me more. But all right, guys, that's going to do it for us this week. And until next time, mahalo.
Competition's starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. A made no way from the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A game. Better bring your A game. Competition's starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. A made no way.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan, additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger. And future stronger you can get started now by saving $28 or more when you join today. You in? We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need to keep stepping it up. And free fitness training to help you mix up your routine. Plus, most clubs are open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends February 28th. See Home Club for details.